Blog Talk Radio.
Mi chiamo Afurakanu Afurai Kaisnut, Neye Eguada, Medinde, Ujirafo, Kwesi, Ra Nehem, Bata Akan, Okamuma, and Amaruka, Etifi Mu, Ujirafo. That means greetings to all Afurakani Afurai Kaisnut people, meaning Africans, black people. Today is Eguada Marketplace Day. My name is Ujirafo Kwesi Ra Nehem Bata Akan of the Okwamu Nation in North America. So today we're going to have our guest, Iya Naila Akinyemi Sankofa, and she will be talking about her various endeavors that she has in place on Runway Underground, Ntomapa, and a number of other endeavors. We weren't able to list all of them on the website. She has a lot of things going on, good information, products and services for the Afurakani community. What we want to do first is get a couple of announcements. We did reschedule our event, so we spoke about this yesterday, and we also posted the updated event for Las Vegas. It will be August 16th. So when you go to the website, you can check the odirafo.com website, of course, odirafo.com. You can check the Guamu Casa page as well as the front page for the update and the flyer, for the updated flyer. And you can also go to our Ning site, afuraka-afuraikayet.ning.com, and you can get the information there as well as any other upcoming event. We will also be updating the community on the next event that we have in Philadelphia. We're confirming the dates for that, so we will have that posted by tomorrow. By tomorrow afternoon, we'll have some solid dates for that as well. And we have a couple of other tentative dates coming up for possibly in Texas and Florida. So we'll be letting everybody know. Just continue to check the website. Of course, we're on with regard to Blog Talk Radio programs every Benada or Abenada every Tuesday, as well as every Awukuda or Akuada every Wednesday with the Ojira show on Benada Tuesday, and of course Ekwada on Wednesdays, Awukuda. So we will always update on the show as well, but always check our Facebook page. We're on Facebook, Afuraka.Afuraikayet on Facebook. We always update that page, and then we also have the Akanfo Nanasom page on Facebook as well. For those who are not yet on our Ning site, which is our own social network, our private social network, we're going to put that in the chat room, and the chat room is open. It is afuraka-afuraikayet.ning.com. For those who are on the phone, it's afuraka-afuraikayet.ning.com. afuraka-afuraikayet.ning.com. On that social network, you can join the network. Once you're approved, you can create a profile, post videos, post discussions, post blogs, communicate with other people in the community as well as around the world that are Afurakani, Afuraikani people who are engaged in the same study process, studying the same information. We examine our information. We post our videos. We post any new articles we have coming up. We post any new publications. We examine publications. We have discussions. The site has been up for a few years now, so there are hundreds of discussions on various aspects of the information that we publish and speak about. Every time we have a new video or audio, we post that as well, so the various videos that we have are posted there. So it's a good way to connect with people who are studying the same thing and building with individuals who you may not even realize are in your community And once you get on the site, you may find people connected to you or just people who are connected across the country and different parts of the world who are studying that same information. So that's apuraka.ning.com. Let me send out one message to let everybody know that we're on the Facebook group. Give me one second for that. And in the meantime, if you check out our OGDA page, the WAB OGDA page, WABODWIRA, one thing we wanted to go over right quick, with the Marketplace Day, we have seven principles of Amain Sefiu, which is nation building. In the Akan language, Amain means nation, Sefiu means to build or to restore. So nation building, nation restoration. Apurakani, Apurakani, nation building, nation restoration. We have seven principles dealing with that. We have a video where we go into detail about that, the WAB OGDA, the ancestral judgment videos, 2-hour video where we go through these seven principles of purification, but we also address seven principles of nation building, Amain Sefiu. We also have it in our book, Oberima Apurakani Manhood. In the second chapter, we go through the seven principles of Amain Sefiu nation building, and they are connected to the Abosom, the divinities, the forces in nature that govern the seven-day week of the Akan people, which is the same seven-day week that is used in this culture, except, of course, the names are different. Each day of the week is governed by either the solar, lunar, or planetary body that governs that particular day, and the Abosom, the divinities that operate through the solar, lunar, and planetary bodies that govern each day of the week, they give the day its name. So, for example, Binada or Abinada, the term Da means day in Akan culture. Binna is the male Abosom or divinity that governs that day. The planet Mars is called Binna in Akan culture. That divinity is called Binna. This is Heru Behudet in ancient Kemet, Heru Bedat or Heru Bedet. We call him Heru Bedat. It's called Binna in Akan culture. And then the female divinity is Sechima or Sekhmet. In ancient Kemet, she's called Sechima. In Akan, she's also called Apina in Akan culture as well. And she governs that planet. She also governs Binna and Apina, Heru Behudet, and Sechima govern the divine immune system, lymphatic system within the great divine body. They govern your physical immune and lymphatic system. They're protectors, warrioress divinities. And spiritually, they're the force that animates your spiritual immunity, and so forth. So this is why the day is called Binada, or the day of Binna, because they govern that particular planet that governs that day. And every day of the week, there's a divinity that governs that day and gives this particular energy of that day. Joada, or Monday, is governed by the moon, the Abosom, Ajo, and Ajua, which is Asar and Aset in ancient Kemet when they operate through the moon. That's Monday, or moon day, we call Joada. So each day of the week has its own energy. Moon day or the lunar day is a cool kind of energy for that day. Binada or Abinada, the day of Binna, Heru Behudet, and Sechima is more of a fiery energy. So each day has its own character derived from the Abosom that governs the day. So the seven principles of Amain Sefiu are connected to these 7 days and carry the energy of these 7 days. Energy of the Abosom that govern these 7 days. So the first principle of Amain Sefiu, and we deal with that because when we're talking about Ekuada or Marketplace Day, we present to the community Apurakani, Apuraikaini people, African people, black people who are in the community who have products and or services that, number one, serve the community and benefit our community, but also these individuals also share our ancestral values. So, and they're rooted in ancestral culture, Apurakani, Apurakaitni, ancestral religion, so they have a understanding of how that impacts their service to the community. So when we're talking about Marketplace Day, not just any kind of business, but something that's beneficial to the community, but also reflects the values of our ancestral culture. That includes the seven principles of Amainsesu, or nation building. The first principle is in order to have an Amain, a nation, and we're talking about an independent nation, self-governing, self-ruling nation, independent from the whites and their offspring, which this is what we work towards. We establish ourselves where we are, strengthen ourselves where we are, but then, of course, we also work on establishing, acquiring land, whether it's on the continent of Afuraka, Afuraka. Some people will do that. Some people will acquire land in regions like the Caribbean and other places and establish nations, engage in the nation-building process. So that's part of the process, getting yourself together where you are, but at the same time working on establishing a space where we can be self-governing and self-ruling. The first principle of establishing an Amain, or nation, is methods of food production and preservation. So if you're going to be an independent, self-governing nation, you must be able to produce your own food, of course, and preserve. So this, of course, deals with agricultural sciences and so forth. Methods of food production and preservation. So we will bring people onto Ekwua marketplace show who are engaged in that process. Natural organic farming and things like that. Things that we need to sustain ourselves as well as to sustain a nation. The second principle, value of Amainsesu or nation building restoration, is we have to have methods of curing disease. So you have to be able to feed yourself, of course, so you can live. You must be able to cure yourself of disease. You can't establish a nation, an independent nation, and not be able to cure yourself and be dependent on other nations to send you medicine and things like that. Of course, the whites in our offspring would send us things that are poisonous to us, so we can't depend on the enemy. We shouldn't have a desire to depend on anyone to not only feed ourselves but also to cure ourselves of any disease that arises. We have that within our culture. So, of course, we had one of our sisters, a naturopath, who was on the show, who was, you know, she's a doctor of naturopathy, but also is involved in ancestral culture, ancestral religion, and approaches the healing aspect from the lens of our ancestral culture. And we will have other people in the future as well who are dealing with methods of curing disease. They have that product and services, but at the same time, they embrace ancestral cultural values as well. The next principle is a military structure. We must have defense as well as offense. We must be able to protect ourselves. So you establish an Amain, a nation. Number one, of course, you have to be able to feed yourself, methods of food production and preservation. Number two, curing disease, so people can not only survive, but they can also continue even if disease strikes one or more people. Once you have that, you, of course, have to have a military structure because when we establish a nation, of course, the whites in our offspring are going to try to destroy the nation from the outside, as well as if they could, they would try to infiltrate as well, which we won't allow that to happen. So a military structure, we have to establish that. But we'll have people who are engaged in military science, people engaged in martial arts, offer that product, service, expertise, and so forth. We'll have individuals like that on the show as well. The next piece is the institutionalization of our values. We have to establish institutions in the nation so that we can transfer knowledge. So we have to have institutions that teach agricultural science, institutions that teach curing disease, natural medicine, and so forth, institutions that teach military science from an Afurakani, Afurakaitni grounded perspective, martial arts from a grounded perspective. We have to have institutions that transfer knowledge about engineering, textiles, governance, jurisprudence, ancestral religion, establishing ritual practices that reinforce the values of the nation and institutionalize our values. Holidays, of course, we take advantage of the shift in the seasons, take advantage of that energy to replenish ourselves, refocus people individually and collectively towards the values that we support, towards the support and the sustenance and the protection and defense of our Amain, of the nation that we have established. We have to have institutions that transfer knowledge to maintain the civilization, maintain the nation, institutionalizing our value. The next principle is our systems of governance and jurisprudence rooted in our ancestral culture, which, of course, is reflective of Nyamewa, Nyame, and Sheshe, or divine order. So we have to have such systems. We have those systems in our culture. We don't have to recreate anything. Systems of governance, which we have, for example, Akwamu Mine, Amaruka, Itifimu, the Akwamu Nation in North America. Of course, we are an Akan organization. So, of course, our structure is based on that ancient ancestral structure, beginning with the family, of course, the male and female, reflective of the great divine mother and great divine father, Amenet and Amen, or Inyamewa, Inyame, male and female, husband and wife, children, who are part of a larger group of family, and Abusia, an extended family, Abusia Kuo, which is a clan. There are seven major clans, or Musia, Matri Circular, Matri clans in Akan culture. All Akan people are descended from one of those seven clans. One of the great mothers, seven great mothers that govern those seven clans, and those seven clans, of course, are governed by seven female divinities. All of us are connected. Every Akan person in the world is directly connected genetically and spiritually to one of those clans. So when we're part of a clan structure, those who are elders and elderesses within the clan, Nananu Mfanyipo within the clan, who are honorable elders and elderesses, it's from those various clans that the leadership within the elderess class emerge and are selected, and they become advisors on the higher level to the Ohene and Ohema, or the king and queen mother. So we have a structure from starting with the individual family, the extended family, the clan structure, the Nanano Mpanyifo become elders and elderesses, quote-unquote legislators and advisors to the king and queen mother. So we have a governmental structure that organizes our activities as an omai, legislation as well as defense and everything else that coordinates defense, coordinates agricultural activities, coordinates the military structure, of course, coordinates healing practices, coordinates the institutionalization of our values, coordinates building and everything else. So you have to have systems of governance and jurisprudence so you can establish law and maintain order in society without people engaging in self-destructive activity. The next principle, of course, is we have to acquire land and build homes on acquired land. So engineering, we have to engage that process. Of course, we have the institutions that transfer the knowledge of engineering. We have to build our own homes, our own shelter on acquired land. And then, of course, we also must have, the final principle deals with textiles. We have to be able to clothe ourselves, of course. So it's not just food, clothing, and shelter. It's food, but not just being able to have food, but methods of food production and preservation, methods of curing disease, military structure to defend the nation, institutions that institutionalize our values and transfer knowledge and skills and so forth, but institutionalizing the value of the culture, the value of the nation, so that we will maintain the nation. Systems of governance and jurisprudence, systems to establish systems of engineering so that we can build homes and other structures on acquired land, and then clothing ourselves as well, and the institutions and the transfer of knowledge that comes along with developing textiles and engaging that process. So individuals who have businesses offer products and services in these various seven areas of Amain Setsu, of the nation-building, nation-restoration process. People who have those products and services and at the same time embrace our ancestral values rooted in Afurakani, Afurakaini, ancestral religion. Those are the kind of individuals that we have on the show. So that should give you an idea of what's coming up. Okay, hold on one second. Somebody sent a message. Can you hear me now? Let me know if you can hear it clearly. Somebody sent a message that we're having some difficulties. Hit me up in the chat and let me know if you can hear it clearly. And if anyone on the phone, you can just, if you want to call in, I'm sorry, if you want to make a comment or you have a question, just hit the number 1 so that you can raise your hand so we can see that you are good. Okay, so you can't hear clearly. All right. Okay, so that's the basis of the reason why we have the way we structure our guests and the kind of guests that we call on. We will be having a number of different people coming up. Our guests will be calling in a few minutes. If anybody has any questions about the previous show or information regarding that, let us know. For the people who just came in, we did make the announcements that we will be, number one, we did reschedule the event we spoke of last week and spoke of yesterday, the event on Nanasom, Apurakani, Apurakaiti, ancestral religion, dealing with in Las Vegas, that has been rescheduled. It will not be this Saturday, July 19th. That was the original date. We had to reschedule that date. The new date is August 16th. It's at the same place. All the information is the same time. It's just the date is different. So, and let other people know who are connected to you as well, who are going to be attending. We think we were able to get to everyone and let everybody know, but then, and we also put some more information out on Facebook and on the NEEM site. But if you're in connection with other people who may not have gotten the message, just send that message out to your contact that has been changed from July 19th to August 16th for Las Vegas, for the Nanasom event in Las Vegas. We will have information next. Hold on, somebody said they can't hear. Okay, so there's only one person can't hear. One person said they can hear. One person said they can't hear. So send us a message. Another person, other people in the chat, let us know if you can hear us. And hold on one second. Let's see. I see a hand raised on the phone line, so let me see, make sure this is working correctly. The system is working correctly. Okay, Michio, 70054, you had a comment or a question?
What's up, bro? Yeah, system working correctly. And a quick comment, those individuals who having problem on the while the system to use, I think the phone line seems to be the best way to interact with the show. My question is, I called in last night, this is my second time interacting with the situation, which was going on. Before I see the question, I want to say, you know, basically my ability to articulate, you know, much thanks to you. Much praise to the ancestors and ancestors to the United States for making everything happen that's supposed to happen. My question is, how does one officially become part of the nation?
Okay, so you're talking about, okay, and I see somebody, a couple of people said they can hear. Okay. So you're saying becoming part of, did you say the nation or a nation?
The common nation in North America.
Okay. So this is what it is. When we talk about the Akwamu Mine, which is Akwamu Nation in North America, we're talking specifically, that's a reference to, for example, the Akan people are a large ethnic group. They're one of the largest ethnic groups on the continent. They're in Ghana and Ivory Coast, primarily in West Africa, Afrikai. Collectively, it's about 20 million Akan people there. They, of course, millions of us were taken from the continent. So just like the Yoruba and the Akan and Ebe and Bakongo, those are like the large groups that many of us were taken from. So therefore, as a result, millions of black people in North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe, many of them, millions of them, are from those large ethnic groups like the Yoruba, Akan, and so forth. So amongst the Akan, there are subgroups in the Akan ethnic group. The largest subgroup that most people have heard of at some point is the Asante people. Sometimes they say it Ashanti, but it's Asante people. Another large group is the Fanti people. That's the second largest Akan subgroup. Then you also have the Akwamu, which is the group that we are from. So when we say Akwamu Man and Marukai Tipimu, that's specifically dealing with, we are actually Akwamu. That's our ethnicity. It's that particular sub-Akan group is the group that we're from. But then there are also Fanti people in North America. There are also Asante people in North America. Many people have not found out yet who they are, but they, all their life they've actually been that. That's what they were in a previous incarnation, and they're the same people now, even though they've incarnated through their blood circle in America. So it's a statement of identity. So it's not a sense of somebody joining a group. You're actually born into a group. So the key is you want to find out from your unsamanfo what group you were actually born into, that you incarnated from. What group were you from in the past? If you found out that you were, for example, when we were talking about last week, the Aboa Nkwa, we were talking about that ritual practice of ritual movement for health and strengthening, balancing, and so forth. And we do these ritual movements with our bodies to strengthen our bodies, but also to stretch and heal, but also to attune ritually to our Achinebo, our animal totems. And in the process, we can strengthen ourselves, but also balance ourselves on a regular basis. We said he came out of the Akwamu Nation in North America, but also the Fanti Nation in North America. One of the members of the Fanti Nation in North America, as well as in collaboration with us, produced the Aboa Nkwa. So, this particular individual found out that she's Fanti ancestrally, and that's the ancestral group that she incarnated from, so she knows what group she's from. And it's the same thing with us. So, some people find out they're Yoruba, some people find out they're Bakongo. Whatever group you find out you're from, dealing with your unsamanfo, then you reestablish that culture within your own family and start that nation-building process right there. And when you engage that process, then you know you'll find that you start connecting with others who are engaged in the same kind of process. And when we, you know, it doesn't matter whether you Akan, Europe, or whatever. We of course, connect with Akan people, but then we connect with Yoruba people who are engaged in the same process right here in America, people who are born and raised in America and find out through their ancestry who they are and start reestablishing that culture within their own families individually and then those who are connected to them so we can connect that way. So everybody is engaged in that nation-building process, and we're reestablishing Afuraka, Afurakai, in reality, and a real sense of Pan-Africanism, people knowing who they are, embracing their culture and their own expression, but then at the same time connecting with others who are engaged in the same process, and we can, you know, establish that way. So you start off with your unsamanfo, find out what group you come from, and then begin to reestablish that right where you are, and then, of course, you'll connect with others who are doing the same thing.
Most definitely. I feel that to the fullest. You know, and I don't know. I can't say. But in the sense that I can say, you know, I think, you know, the unsamanfo has led me to I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, the Akwamu Man.
Okay.
You know, like you say, you know, there's certain things that lead you to the, you know, to where you're going as one matures. Because the other night you were speaking about the breakdown of Moses in relation to Huti as Ma'atcheru, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, and then you started to deal with the sun and the moon, and how the story was a perversion of our story, as you would say, true story,
right.
You know. And you know, I had a birthday, last Friday, which was the 11th of July, using the European calendar, and you know, according to the European, you know, astrology, cosmology, you name it, I don't say that because I don't know what is the correct words which we should use in our culture, but I'm a Cancer, and Cancer is related to the moon, but I was born on a Sunday, you know what I mean? And I just found out from my mother that I was, not only was I born on a Sunday, but I was born around 12 o'clock, between 12 and 2. You know, so I didn't, you know, in relation to this, to your story, and then you start talking about, you know, being a scribe, and I do a lot of writing, I do a lot of transcribing, you know what I mean? So I just say all that, you know, to come to share my experience along this road to reclaiming and the reclamation and the restoration of our nation and our culture and our people, you know. And I'm very excited, man. I'm very excited, and I'm very grateful. And I know I'm in tune with the answer because I have a serious story, and I mean dealing with the Achiwadi folk, you know what I mean? So everything is everything. I got a question for you though. I don't know if it's appropriate. I want to comment too, right? We're talking about land acquisition. I spoke to you last night as well about the Gullah Geechee Nation, and within the Gullah, one of the things, I don't know if this other places in this country, in this landmass, but dealing with on the Sea Islands, you have something called heirs property, right? And with this heirs property, I was advised that in the area, my family is up on the Sea Islands, which is Jean's Island, and they have heirs property. And with the heirs property, they got it structuralized in the way that the land is always going to be passed down to the family members as long as they continue to pay the property tax. But this heirs property, I don't know what you want to call it, policy or whatnot, I think down in that area is one of the only places in which, I'm not sure, I'm not correct. I mean, probably got to do some deeper research.
Can you hold on 1 second, because some people are saying they can't hear. Can somebody send a text? I'm sorry, in the chat. Can you hear now? And if not, let me see what we can do, because it looks like it might be going in and out. This is what I want to do. Okay, brother, can you send me an email. What I'm going to do is, just in case, just to see if this works, I'm going to hang up and call right back and see if it clears up. That's what I want to do. So people, you might have to, I don't know how it's going to work, you might have to call back in. Everybody on the phone might have to call back in, but you may not. So if you don't get cut off, then you're straight. The message may just say the person is trying to call back in. So this is what I'm going to do. Just send me an email with that question. I'm going to hang up, call back in, and see if the line is more clear. And then we're going to get back on. Is that okay?
For sure.
Okay. Oh, it looks like people are saying they can hear now. It says sign out and sign back in. All right. Okay. Well, you know what? We'll just see. Well, send me that email anyway. Send me an email, because it looks like people are saying that you have to sign out and sign back in. But there's people in the chat, in the chat room. As soon as anything drops, just send us a message real quick so we can rectify that. But so our guest is on the line right now, so we're going to go to our guest right quick. Make sure this is in.
Catch up.
Okay, Michiawo, can you hear me?
Yes, Benny.
Okay, Michiawo. So our guest is Ia Naila Akinyemi Sankofa. She is the owner of Runway Underground. She's the owner of Ntumupa. And the number of Sankofa Safo and a number of other endeavors, many different things. We are honored that Nana Iya is on the phone with us. She has just a wealth of information on various different things. Remember, we were talking about the seven principles of nation building. We were talking about textiles and development and things of that nature. Iya Naila deals with that, with the Runway Underground, with the Ntomapa, and different things as well. But she also deals with natural medicine. She's involved in the Yoruba tradition as well. So a number of different things. So there's a lot that we can cover. Let me put the link to, well, there were a couple of links to the website. Let me put the website in. So if you can just introduce yourself to the listening audience, and we're going to get into, if you want to get into Runway Underground first, or you want to get into Ntumapa first, I mean, it's up to you, because there's a lot to cover, and I want everybody to be able to get just an idea, a taste of all the different things that you offer. So how about just how did you get involved in ancestral culture, and then as well as being an artist, and how it relates to your establishing the Runway Underground and the Ntumapa?
Okay. Michawo, or Michamo, because there's more than one other person on the line and listening in. Hetep, Santisana, just greetings, greetings, greetings. Madase, Papapa, my brother, for inviting me. And I do apologize to everyone for coming in late. I was at my studio, and one of the our models, who is actually wanting to delve into fashion design and being a stylist, was going to come and meet with me so we can discuss some things, and then she was going to drop me off here at the house, and she texted me at the last minute saying she had another thing to do, and so I had to race back on the bus and get back here, and so here I am. Everything in its own place and time. So how did I get started? Well, Runway Underground, and you can Google Runway Underground as we talk. There's a Facebook page and a website. And Runway Underground is basically my main focus as far as my professional career is concerned right now. And it came about in 2008 when, at the time, I was more focused on, I went to school for interior design and studio art, but I've always done something related to fashion in the background, especially accessories. I'm originally from Chicago, born and raised, moved around to a few places and ended up in Texas and then ended up in Austin. And so I'm proud to say that I'm one of four black female metalsmiths in Austin. And I mean a true metalsmith, not somebody who just, you know, wraps wire, not that there's anything wrong with that, but we do more. We cast, we solder, we weld, and I also do some forge work. And so there's only four of us in town, and I'm one. One of my beiji is one, and then two other sisters. And so I've always included fashion accessories, adornment in my work as a multidisciplinary artist and as well as being and designing furniture and doing interior design and renovation work. But in 2008, we noticed that there weren't any black fashion designers being included in our local main fashion shows and events. And when I started questioning, you know, Oyembo about why we were being left out, the answer was always, oh, are there any black fashion designers in Austin? Or we don't know any. Or we had one. And, of course, for me, that's BS, and I don't accept excuses like that, especially from white folks. And especially in a town where, you know, the population here, well, in 2008 it was a little less, but right now it's about 700,000+ people in the, you know, in the city. So you can't have a town at the time, yeah, it was 625,000 at the time. So, you know, you can't have a population of over 600,000 people and think that there are no black fashion designers. That's not only ignorant, it's insulting, and it's just, like, you know, silly. And so I got some folks together, and we started talking about it and the issue and no one being satisfied with any of the answers that were being given, and so or the excuses. And so we started meeting and said we want to just at least do some kind of major fashion event where it's just about black folks, black designers, black photographers, hair, makeup people, so on. And then it evolved into something bigger, more than just a one-time event. And we said, no, we need, what about models? And although there are all these fashion events going on in town, there might be, like, the major fashion events, like what Austin Fashion Week might have, you know, a few dozen fashion designers. And, of course, again, all of them white or maybe one or two that aren't. And then the major shows might have well over 100 models in them and only, you know, 2 to 5 might be black. And so we needed to include that in the equation as well. And so after meeting and talking and meeting and fussing and, you know, fighting and demanding, we decided, okay, let's just do our own organization and just do our own events and let's help other black fashion designers or other industry professionals get where they want to get and do it well and do it memorably and differently. And so we were like, we got to come up with a name. So we bounced around ideas for names. And just one day I was talking to another sister friend of mine who's also from Chicago, and I was telling her about the fashion shows that they have in South Africa, the black folks have, where they have a South African fashion week that's, you know, run by IMG, and it's really expensive like all the other fashion weeks and nearly impossible to get into if you don't have the budget and the PR and marketing mechanisms behind you. And so just researching and watching and having other people tell me what's going on and looking at videos of black folks in South Africa and Johannesburg, and they were doing fashion shows, these elegant, beautiful fashion shows in alleys, under bridges, and just these really, really non-traditional urban settings. And I'm describing this time like, yeah, and these, you know, South Africans, they're doing these underground shows, and they're phenomenal, and they're serving, you know, champagne, and, you know, they're really, really elegant events in very non-traditional settings. And then they do these shows, and then they get the hell out of Dodge because, of course, you know, they're doing them illegally. And so I'm talking to her, and she says, yeah, but, you know, Naila, you've got to do some, you know, runway shows, and even if they're underground in Austin, you know, you got to do your underground thing. And so, and then it just clicked, and I could hear the ancestors just screaming at me, right underground, there's your name. And it's also a homage to the Underground Railroad. And that's why in our logo you see two sets of railroad tracks converging into a tunnel that almost kind of looks like an eye or a vortex. And that's how Runway Underground came about, and the name and the symbolism. And basically our goal is to support and mentor and provide, you know, professional business development services and resources to black folks in the fashion industry in Austin and outside of Austin. We plan on launching Austin's first black fashion magazine, or actually we call it more than that. It's a conscious diaspora African fashion journal that will include lifestyle, you know, arts, holistic body and health care, and just things that pertain to us and fashion, but with our voice. And we hope to launch that in this fall, or at least have a soft launch with our end of season grand finale event. And the name of the magazine is going to be called Jishe, and Jishe is a Yoruba word, and it means to deliver a message. And so basically how we incorporate ancestral tradition in the things that I do specifically from a business perspective is I have to walk a fine line with fashion because you come across every type of person in the world.
I just want to say we just posted the link, the runwayunderground.webs.com link. We just posted it in the chat. The people who are on the phone, it's runwayunderground, all one word, .webs.com. runwayunderground.webs.com. So we just posted that link. It has information about Jishe Fashion Journal as well as, of course, the Runway Underground. So I just wanted people to know they can go there. But you were saying that you had to walk a fine line.
Yeah, and also there's a Runway Underground. Like, if you just Google Runway Underground, and I'm so proud, like, we're the first thing that comes up in almost every search engine. And so you'll get to our website, you'll get to the Facebook page, as well as our other, like, Entumapa and a few other things as well. So basically having to walk a fine line with merging ancestral tradition and culture, which of course includes the spiritual and religious side of it. But I'm very cautious because in the fashion industry, I love what I do. I really, really love what I do. It's arduous. It's stressful. It's a pain in the ass a lot of times. But I love what I do because it makes a difference in what we're trying to do here, not only in the fashion community from a Black perspective, but also in the people that we affect and come across of, you know, any and all ethnicities. But, of course, my main thing and main focus is always about getting to the Black folks and getting the Black/African message across, the diaspora message across. But having to walk that fine line because fashion isn't, I mean, people say that, oh, it's a cliche, fashion is a cutthroat business. No, fashion will kick a, you know, 300-pound linebacker's ass every day because of just the nature of the business and it's every day. It's touching, I mean, every day there's something and it has to be done, even not even just from a designer's perspective, but from an overall business perspective. And so I come across all of these different folks and there's, you know, there's folks of all ethnicities. Obviously I'm running across white folks. And to me, well, everybody, if they're not Black, you're white. But and also the bisexual community. So the gays and the lesbians are there as well. And so I have to interact with them, just like you do. And if you go to any plantation where you're working with, you know, plantation as a job, and you're working with diverse people. Then you're going to come across them. I just don't bring them into my personal life. I also don't bring tradition and culture in too much because not only does it scare people, but I have to keep that separate. That's the line in the sand for me. And it's not that I'm keeping it separate because I'm hiding it. I'm keeping it separate because I don't want intrusion. I don't want people asking, well, what does that mean? Or what does that involve? We were doing our winter boot camp session this past February. And it turns out that one of the guys who was, one of the designers who was participating in the boot camp, who's gay and white, he kept referencing his house. He lives out what we call in the country. So he lives outside of Austin. And he kept referencing where he lived. And I was like, wait a minute, that sounds really familiar. Oh, and he said the street. And I'm like, oh, well, you live on the same street as so-and-so. And so-and-so happened to be this person who was the head of an ile here. And as Kwesi calls the homo ile. But he says, oh, yeah, no, I don't know. I'm not her neighbor. I actually bought her house. And I was like, oh, what do you mean you bought her house? That's an ile. How did you buy the house, the ile of a priestess that's here in this community? And it turns out the house was foreclosed on. They got it. And And then they said, oh, well, I'm glad that you know about it. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I was there when, you know, when a lot of the things were put out there, like the shrines and the so-called, quote-unquote, you know, sacred areas and everything. And he says, well, great. Well, I'd love to have you come out and, you know, show us how to, like, you know, we didn't touch anything. We just left everything the way it was, the way they left it. And there were some large monumental size shrines and altars that were permanently built and in place out there. So, you know, once they, I guess, lost the house, they couldn't, you know, take those things with you, them. Well, if it were me, I'd have destroyed them. And so he was saying, oh, you need to come out and just, you know, show us how to, like, you know, like what they were for, tell them what it's about, you know, and he mentions this other big gay designer who's supposed to be familiar with Yoruba tradition, and he said that, oh, yeah, so-and-so came out, and he talked to the ancestors out there and told them that it was okay for us to be here and that, you know, we were nice people and, you know, that it's okay that we're inhabiting the same space. And so then he goes back to say, yeah, and if you can come out and talk to them and tell them, it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And they were like, because everybody stopped, and there was a room full of white folks, except maybe one other black person and myself. And they were like, well, he was like, well, why not? And I'm like, well, because first of all, there's nothing to talk to. He was like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, once they left, actually before they left, the spirits, the energy,
right,
the deities, they picked up and left that space a long time ago. Okay. So there was nothing. There's no power out there for them, for me to talk to, unless I bring it with me. So there's no residual anything there. And then one of the white girls jumped in and she said, well, no, but wouldn't there, and she was the one who used residual. She said, well, isn't there some residual energies left or spirits? And I'm like, no, except for maybe some discarnate ones, but no. And then they wanted to object some more. And I'm like, let me tell you something. I know that you all want to think and believe whatever you think and believe and apply it to my ancestral tradition, but I live, sleep, eat, drink, and breathe this every day. This is a part of my blood. This is a part of my spirit and my ori, my spiritual head. I'm telling you that there's nothing out there worth me coming to talk to or that you can affect or entice in any way. This is my tradition, and I know what's there. And then somebody said something else, subject, and I'm like, I guess y'all don't get it. Okay, so I'm with one of the main people out there who helped build those shrines and bring those energies there. And once all of this other stuff started happening, which also caused them to lose the house in the first place, that meant that the Orisha, the spirits, the deities, the ancestral spirits, all of them got up and left a long time ago. So there is nothing to talk to out there. And he was like, oh, well, that's so disappointing and that's so sad. I'm sorry if your feelings are hurt, but you can't tell me about my tradition, and you can be hopeful all you want, and you can invite some little shamrocks or whatever little, you know, spirits your Asian boyfriend has to invite there, and they can come all day long, and y'all can talk to them. But there's nothing of any organic ancestral religion or spiritual traditions whatsoever left there for you all to talk to or to get to do anything for you. And the conversation over. So all of that to say that this is one of the reasons why I, like, make sure that I don't bring as little of my tradition and culture into the fashion realm because of all of the misconceptions, the intrusions, and I'm not here to educate and provide information. I'm not here to give awo, mystery, secrets to anybody about our ancestral tradition and culture who does not need to know. And that includes Negroes.
Right.
That includes
that's a good point. Because people who are in different industries, say you're therapist or a psychologist, and you're an independent contractor, but then you sometimes have to go to conferences, or you have to go to continuing education units, or you have to you have to interact with. If you're a therapist and you're working with children who are in foster care or something like that, and you know you have to go to these meetings at the psychiatric hospital, you have to go to these meetings at the school, you have to interface with these white folks, even though you're, meaning spirits of disorder, whites and offspring, even though you're a independent contractor, what will end up happening, and that's just in any industry, but this is just an example, in the same example that E.L. was talking about. Whites and offspring will always try to, you know, start probing into, well, what does your name mean, or what is this about, or what is this, you know what I'm saying? So, of course, they're spirits of disorder. We're not giving them any information whatsoever. So unless we have our actual own structure, our own independent, you know, business, product, service, organization, where they're not involved, and we do everything in-house, when we do interface with them, and when we're forced to interface with them, there's a way to do that without giving them any information about the culture and letting them know that they're not getting any information about the culture, no matter how hard they try to force themselves on it.
Right. I'm sorry, I had the phone muted. Right, and that's, I mean, and I don't mind telling people what my name means, because it's like a slap in the face. It's like armor. It's like, you know, a headbutt to a lot of folks. Because it's usually, people usually ask me what my name means, like right at a moment when they think that, I don't know, that I'm powerless or something. or after something really, really apparently impossible has been achieved. But I even had to put down one of the white girls who was at the boot camp, the summer boot camp, who came in and she, you know, all, and with all good intentions, she said, oh, you know, Naila, you know I love you. You know, no, she says, I think Tumapa, the boot camp is great, and what you're doing is great, and you know I love you. And I said, okay, first of all, I don't know that, and secondly, you know, stop buttering me up. Just go on and say what you got to say. And she says, well, I think that you would probably have a lot more people involved in the boot camp if it weren't for the name. I was like, which name? You mean in Tumapa? And she says, yeah. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. And everybody stopped. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And I cut her off. And I'm like, I don't know what you're about to say, and I really don't care, but I want to tell you right now, I'm not changing the name for anybody or anyone. You know, and Tumapa has a very specific meaning and place within what we're trying to do. And if white folks can't tune their Europeanized mouths around saying in Tumapa, but y'all can say Hernandez, Rodriguez, Gonzalez all day long, but you can't say in Tumapa. So that's as far as I'll bring African ancestral tradition into what I'm doing with Runway Underground. I have no problem with giving names and titles using our ancestral languages, because they have more meaning, and they say, one word can say, you know, far much more than two or three sentences. With some of the events that we plan, we make sure that people know that, you know, that what we're doing is all about black folks and our mission and goals and success. And if folks don't want to get on board with that, then, you know, screw them. We've had people, you know, white designers, you know, stuff comes back to me and, you know, have heard white designers say, well, we don't want to deal with all of that African jungle shit. You know, it's like, well, well, first of all, if you were intelligent, you would know that there are no jungles in Africa. And then secondly, that's okay. Because I don't want to deal with your white O-face shit. So so that having that fine line with folks about how much culture and tradition I'll introduce is always at the forefront of my mind. Now, we do a lot of, like our big fashion shows and events, and even some of our photo shoots that are more stylized, like our editorial shoots. They can have lots of references, and especially visual references and performance references to our culture and traditions. I just don't explain them. If people say they don't get it, they don't understand, or if I say that, you know, something can be touched or not touched, like our models, for instance, one of the components of the Runway Underground is that we have a model agency component. And, of course, all of our models are black, and a lot of people still don't get that, or they didn't at first. Now they're starting to really get it. And and so our models get full coaching and training, professional coaching and training before they go on any kind of assignment. And we make sure that they know what they need to know before they go anywhere because of the handicap here, because of the misperceptions not only about black people but specifically about black models and this whole idea of commercial beauty or beauty in the industry in general. So our models get all of the professional coaching and training that they could ever want or need, and nobody really in the industry does that, at least not in this area, which gives our models an advantage. And right now we have designers who will only work with Runway Underground models because of, you know, that policy of ours that they're coached and trained. But sometimes I include a little slip in, a little tradition, or have to. One of the things I don't do is I don't wear my leke. I don't wear a lot of my ritual, ceremonial, sacred, consecrated implements or charms, amulets, and so on. Especially because I have to be in contact with white people too much. I have to touch them, especially if I'm working with models. I mean, you know, because we also produce shows for other folks. And don't get me wrong, I love making money, and I totally believe in that, you know, Yoruba 16 truth that, you know, that it is my birthright to be successful and prosperous. And being a child of Ogun and Oshun and Bena, I live in the 21st century. I need to have lights on, and I need to have good food to eat just like anybody else. So, and that requires money. And so I have no problem with making money. My issue is that I have to be careful about how the two merge. And so I'm not going to just do business with black people because I live in an alternate universe called Austin, Texas, and there are only, you know, 8.37% black folks here. And I would starve if I had to depend on my business coming only from black folks. That's not what I'm saying. Money can come from whomever it needs to come from and opportunities. At the same time, I don't mix the two in my personal life or in my spiritual life. But when I absolutely have to, and especially when it's an opportunity to educate other black folks like our models, I will give them, you know, holistic body care advice and tools to use to take care of their skin, to take care of their bodies. We do retreats for our models along with our regular coaching sessions where they come in and I do holistic cooking and health classes and demos and actually cook for them and show them how. So most of our models are, you know, like in college, and so they're young, 18 to 23-year-olds, and so, of course, you know, anybody under 25 isn't really eating as good as they can, especially if they're away from home and at school. And so we try to pass those things on to them. And so a lot of them will come to me and they'll ask, well, Ms. Nayula, I have, you know, my cycle and I have cramps. Could you make that tea for me that you made? Or I have this thing going on with my skin. What can you recommend? And I also tell them that if they're on their cycle, that they need to let me know before they touch me or do anything, because if I do have on my leke, I don't want them touching me. So during that time of the month, and for a reason. But so sometimes I do get to slip some things in there, but it's not really overt, like in my art, when I do my studio work, when I do art exhibits, when I do my my ritual work, then yes. All tradition is there all day long, and I don't like leave that out. Excuse me for a second. My baby's asking me a cooking question. I'm sorry.
Say that again, question. The chat room. There was a question in the chat room. It says, typical runway modeling usually requires tall people. Does Runway Underground follow that requirement as well?
Absolutely not. Look at our website on our model page or our call page, and you'll see that one of the things that we have models of all sizes and ages. We just don't go below 16. And we have a model currently who's 47, and she's from Uganda, and the mother of three, or two, excuse me. She's 5'9", which is the typical size of a model, and she's about a size 4, on a bad day, a size 6, whatever that means. But we also have models who are 5. We just signed some models who were about to sign some models who are 5'2", 5'4", 5'6.5". We also have some models who are 5'10" and 6 feet tall, who are size 14s and 16s. We also have males. The male models, you know, are short as 5'7", and then we have the 6 foot and above. So no, we don't follow that, because otherwise, if we did, we would be falling right into this very thing that we wanted to sort of evolve. And that's why the full name of Runway Underground is Runway Underground, the Evolution Fashion Production Group Network and Publishing. We want to evolve the fashion industry, at least on the local level. So we do use models of all heights, sizes, and ages. We insist that our models have, my line in the sand is that our models have to have natural hair. There's a few who don't have natural hair or sneak in getting, you know, extensions or weaves or whatever in between in their regular lives. But they know that they have to walk back in the door or let me know they've done that. So again, we have models of non-traditional heights and sizes as well as traditional commercial size models.
Okay. And I want to remind people that when you look on the Runway Underground website, you'll also see different covers for the G-Shape Fashion Journal. And it says Austin's first bi-monthly conscious diaspora African black fashion journal, but you also said it's a lifestyle journal as well, rooted in a cultural approach to life. One thing I want to ask about, we were talking about the 7 basic principles of Amai Ancestry or nation building before you got on, and we were talking about how we would have people from, you know, when we're introducing people every week on Egua, on the show, on the Marketplace show, we, of course, invite people who have products and services for the Afro-Akani, Afro-Akaitan community, but also share our ancestral values. At the same time, we were talking about the 7 principles of nation building, and, of course, you need methods of food production and preservation. You need methods of curing disease, military structure, system institutionalization of values and building institutions and governments and jurisprudence and so forth. But you also need to, and also to be able to build homes on acquired land, but you also need clothing, textiles, and that's something that many people don't deal with. If they're talking about nation building, they you know, they may be talking about getting some land and growing some food, which is good, but of course we have to clothe ourselves, shelter ourselves, protect ourselves, you know, heal ourselves and so forth. But talk about how you got into dealing with textiles and, you know, the approach from the Yoruba perspective. How does that inform your work with textiles?
Right. So textiles have always been there. They were there before I wanted to be a fashion designer by the time I was 8.5, 9 years old. And then I gave up on the idea when I started seeing my things that I was making for my dolls in magazines already. But it always stayed there with me. Actually, my bio about that is because I have a label called Inyama Esheona, and so my bio is on there about that. And it also talks about how I use traditional artisan techniques in creation of my garments and my textiles for my garments. So all the artistic forms that I'm involved in, are lineage based. So I have folks in my lineage from my Yoruba side as well as my Akan side and my Congo side, and Edo. Those are my dominant ancestral traditions. And so I've always loved the carvings and beaded works, paintings, all of that, all of those artistic things since I was a little girl. And then when I got in college, even though I focused on interior design and studio art, I couldn't leave, those parts wouldn't leave me alone. Those other elements would not leave me alone. So I always found myself either gravitating towards reading books, and, of course, this was at a time I was in college, at a time when we didn't have the Internet at all. You had to go to the library and take books out, and the best you could get was maybe some VHS tapes and so on, or look at things on microfiche. And so researching and coming into contact with information about our ancestral traditions was a lot more difficult and different than it is now. But it found its way to me nonetheless, especially in pieces that were bought over from the continent by folks. And so they were always at the forefront of my mind, but also in the back of my mind, or subliminally or unconsciously, I was always including something that looked like beads or shells or certain patterns and textiles in my paintings. My drawings, so I did a lot of detailed pen and ink drawings. I was doing a series of pen and ink drawings that were always black, white, and red and didn't have a frame of reference for Eshu until much later. I take great pains to include some form of our artisan tradition in my work. So a lot of times, a lot of my garments, Lacey, did you want to put up the, on our Runway Underground Facebook page, there are a lot more photos of a lot of my garments, and a lot of photos haven't been released because we're holding them for the release of the magazine, but I'll put up the link to my website for my garments, and you can see some of what I'm talking about. Here it comes now. So while a lot of my garments, and I do specialize in couture and demi-couture as well as ready-to-wear, and so a lot of my garments don't look like African clothing, except the influence of the beadwork or the embellishments are definitely from our various ancestral traditions. I even like the stitch work in certain ancient Japanese forms of textile needlework, as well as other cultures. But to me, seeing those techniques doesn't mean like, oh, I'm just going to make all my stuff look like it's Japanese or Chinese, or I'm going to have all my these things, or this collection look like it's from Afghanistan. It's like, no, I might see a technique or learn about a technique and find a way to incorporate it in what I do from an African perspective. So dyeing fabrics, weaving fabrics or textiles, doing stamp work on them, as well as silk screen. And then I do a lot of bead work. So there's this gray dress that's in one of the photos on one of the websites and one of our models, and it has a fine, intricate hand bead work on there on the edges of the tiers of the dress. I did those myself. Because if you know that in, like, Yoruba, Cameroon, cultures and traditions, as well as, and then there's some Akan and other West African traditions where beadwork is very, very essential and normal. It's just like, it's traditional. I just may change up the color variations of the types of beads that I use. Our models, you know, the dresses or the garments that I make, maybe very Western in style. However, I'll embellish them with, like, jewelry that looks African-centered or is African. even when we're doing shoots for our models, we may do a test shoot for our models, and I'll include a cowrie-shell belt and wrap it around the model's head. Or I've taken, actually, one of my big African, or not African skirts, but my big dyed skirts, and I've wrapped it around the head of one of our male models to make him look more regal. So while I try to leave specifics about our culture and traditions out of the business side of what I do as a fashion designer and with running Runway Underground and in Tumapah and so on, I don't leave it out of my work at all or completely. Sometimes it's masked. Sometimes I can use just the plain, ordinary fabric that you would find anywhere and not attribute it to anything African. But if I cut the garment a certain way, or if I do something to the fabric, it'll reflect back to some ethnic, to most people's mind, it has some ethnic flair or flavor to it that they may not be able to attribute to Africa, but me, I know what I'm putting into my pieces and why, and I don't leave that out. And that's also what makes my pieces unusual and just different, because there's actually really nothing new or in fashion, it's only different. So anyway, I hope that answered the question. That was a long answer.
No, it does. No, I appreciate that. And it, so people understand, like we were talking about, of course, the Runway Underground, the fashion industry, but Naila is also a phenomenal artist. She talked about briefly, the metalworking that you do, but a painter, mm-hmm. sculptor, making dolls. Well, what are the different, in fact, there's a couple of questions. One question online was, what was the inspiration behind the image and color choices that went into your ancestral painting? But also, and included with that question, I wanted to ask, just share with the audience all the various products that you have available, whether it's paintings, sculptures, of course, the Runway Underground and the fashion and the, textiles and everything, but what are the various things that you offer so they know what you offer that they can consume, what they can acquire?
Mm-hmm.
And then also the question online was, in the chat room, was what was the inspiration behind the image and color choices that went into your ancestral painting?
Okay. So, and also there was another question earlier, I think, or at least you sort of prefaced one of the original question that I just asked, or the last question that I just asked, which is how do we include our, like textiles and like
right.
food and making things into our culture and traditions or how and our business aspects. Well, for me, okay, so one, like little known fact that people don't think about is that there's two things that every human being in the world living in either a westernized or a modernized civilization have to do. Doesn't matter what your status is, where you live, how much money you make, every single person in the world who doesn't live in the rainforest or in some, or seriously organic environment has to do every day, and even them to a certain degree. And that's everybody has to eat and everybody has to put some clothes on. It doesn't
right.
matter whether you get your clothes from a thrift store, whether you make your own clothes, whether you go to the mall every day or every week, everybody got to put some clothes on and you got to eat. And so since the fashion industry is one of the, like in New York, is the second biggest money-making industry in New York City next to the stock exchange. So the
okay.
fashion industry puts about $400 billion into the economy every year by creating jobs and the retail and all of that. So for me, taking advantage of
now, can you say,
an industry.
Say that, say that again. You said the fashion industry is the second largest industry
in New York.
Next to the stock exchange. Okay.
Yeah. So the stock exchange is the only, previous mayor, he got on, the New York Fashion Week can bring 19 billion dollars into the New York economy every year. So if you have any kind of inclination towards sewing, knitting, weaving, crocheting, jewelry making, then that's a way for you to feed yourself by your own hand. which is actually part of a prayer to Eshu, is allow me to succeed by my own hand, to succeed and prosper by my own hand.
And share with the people who Eshu is?
Eshu Elegba, Elegwa is a Yoruba divine force in nature, a deity that is the that governs communication, opens the roads and the paths, carries our prayers and our offerings, as well as carries our blessings and responses from the other realm back to us. Opens paths. He is the trickster. He is the one deity in Yoruba tradition who can actually that allows us to be able to understand each other as we speak. he's a Risha of medicine and herbs and healing, just as much as Oshun and Osain and other Yoruba deities. And that's just the tip of the iceberg about him. So, so the other question was, how does?
You were saying that, and I asked that because you said there was a prayer associated with Eshu.
Oh, right. And what I basically said was that you can create and manifest, and let me get rid of this other call. You can basically feed yourself. You can supplement maybe your day job with your ability to create textiles or clothing, accessories, or whatever your art form may take. That is a way to either break away from having to go to a plantation every day, or like I said before, or to supplement your day job or night job or whatever it is, and by your own hand. You are providing for yourself by your own hand, which is with a loose reference to the prayer to Eshu. And also keeping in line with, what you were talking about as far as like the seven principles of wealth and prosperity or marketplace. To me, I think of marketplace is involved in all of that. And there's seven principles. So you find some way to don't shirk off some talent or ability that you have. Just make sure you're good at it. Get really good at it and turn it into something that can bring you prosperity and abundance, or supplement, or stepping stone to something bigger. And what was the next question? Was how does ancestral tradition inform my painting?
Right. What was the inspiration behind the image and color choices that went into your ancestral painting?
Okay. So if you go to, there's some of my paintings on my Sankofa, no, excuse me, I have the website. Wait, see, it's designworkstudios.web.com, and that's where you can see a lot of my paintings and the dolls and the other, like the little Ori prints and so on. So it's designworkstudios.web.com, and I'll put it up here now. But the paintings, like I mentioned before, are the drawings, like were red, black, and white. I paint based on spirit, so wherever spirit guides me. I know it sounds like a cliche thing, but it's also kind of a cliche question. And so people ask, like, where do artists get their inspiration from? A lot of we get our inspiration from the things we see, the things that come in our dreams, issues in culture and society, especially if you're a cultural artisan or one that's a socially conscious one. You put what's going on in the times in your work. For me, a lot of times, because I do abstract work as well, which is apparently supposed to be unusual for black folks, but it's not. And so I do abstract work, and I also do very realistic work or work that have a little bit of both. And so for me, it's about the color. It's how I'm moved. It depends on what medium I'm working in. If I'm working in painting, then it's just going to come to me based on either sketches that I've already done beforehand, or even though I might have sketches already done as I'm working, the work involves or the message evolves as I'm working based on whatever I'm doing, whatever my ultimate goal is in the work. I also do collages and installation pieces, and like Kwesi said, I do metal work, so I don't just make jewelry. I do small sculptural work and carvings, photography, work in clay, and all of that is informed by, as I said before, like all of the art forms that I'm drawn to or that I'm literally called to come from my ancestral lineages. So these are, you know, the folks, ancestors and ancestresses were, you know, they were ceramicists, they were textile folks. They, you know, and I come from a long lineage of metal workers on both sides of my family, male, paternal and maternal. So ideas in everyday life influence my work, but also messages or conversations that I want to have with the viewer about our tradition, from the simple to the most complex. And then there's a difference between my commercial or everyday work, and then when it comes to, like, because I'm a ritual artisan as well, which means I'm the one who makes the things that folks need for their religious and spiritual, like, ceremonies and shrines and altars. So I'm one of the folks who makes those things. So I'm the one who's going to make your eleke or bead your eleke or your ide, or I'm the one who's going to, if necessary, make your osun staff or implements to go in your pots or make your pots themselves. I'm the one who's going to make the garments that you're going to wear during a ritual or ceremony. And oftentimes, and just for clarity, because this whole thing about initiation just gets on my nerves, you do not have to be initiated to do what I do in the traditional sense of initiation. You have to be, it has to be a part of your birthright or your lineage more than anything else. And then you have to be trained to do it if it doesn't come to folks intuitively, or both. And the person who's initiated, who's supposed to be the priest or the priestess over ceremony or ile or ofie or whatever, they're not the people who make the implements usually. They usually don't have the knowledge, or it's not a part of their lineage to do that. And they may be the people who consecrate them or make them live. But that's, you know, everybody's path is different and role is different. So that's usually unlikely as well. So usually the ritual artisan is the one who makes these artifacts and items or these implements. I don't like to say artifacts, but these implements and tools and so on and garments. And they may also liven them. They may also put the ashe in them. They may consecrate them. Or they may make them and then pass them on to someone who's a ritual, a prayer specialist. That's the person who puts the ashe in an item. And also for more further clarity, that when you find a drum or an artifact that somebody is selling, whether they're from the continent or you found it in some little thrift store tucked in the corner somewhere, it does not have any ashe left. There's nothing in there at that time. So as soon as an item is taken out of its specific ritual or ceremonial context. The deities, the spirits, the entities that live in them or embody them, give them their power, are either going to leave or they're going to go dormant. It doesn't mean that something can't, you know, that Ashe can't be bought back or put or returned to them. It just means that it's usually they're inactive. I just had to say that.
No, I understand. Sometimes people will say they bought some African art or a mask or something like that from a vendor. They brought it home. Then a lot of different things start happening, and they're scared, thinking that the deities are in the mask, as though they're trapped in the mask and they can't get out, like Aladdin or something. And, you know, something has to be done. And it's not. So.
Yeah.
But there is a spirit connected
in there,
to it.
Right. 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 And if there's anything that's in it or trapped in there or whatever, it's not benevolent. It's not.
Right.
It may be a lower nature-based spirit or energy, because you cannot trap an Orisha. You can't make
right.
an Orisha or deity come to an item, you know. It's like saying, ooh, you know, my spoon is empowered with the energy and Ashe of Shango. Well, maybe if it was struck by lightning while I was holding it and I survived, then, yeah, that has some serious direct Ashe from Shango and a whole bunch of other deities that I'm still alive and the spoon is intact. But, no, we get a little bit, we romanticize, you know, like the Ashe and the animism aspect of our ancestor tradition. And a lot of times we get all of these things wrong because somebody else told us or had them wrong. And I usually don't use words like wrong, but in this case I am because it is wrong. Yeah. And so what was the other question? There was something else about Runway Underground or you asked what other items and implements that we have for, like, okay, so I make jewelry. I don't just make jewelry for my collections. I don't sew for people. I design my collection and create pieces, and then if I have my custom, the few custom designs that I do for my couture clients, because couture garments are not cheap, because I do because of the handwork that goes into them. And, you know, everybody talks about couture work and Chanel and Dior and all of the big European white designers, but couture comes from African tradition and clothing and adornment because of all of the wonderful beadwork and other types of embellishments and implements that we put into our clothing and ritual items and so on. They got that from us. That's, you know, and even if they didn't get it directly from us, we were doing it first. So I make jewelry. I do beadwork. I do things with shells. I string work. I do wrap. I do peyote stitches and items with using peyote stitch, which is a type of beadwork or bead technique. I crochet, which on the, almost every one of the sites you'll see from different things that I do. I crochet garments, I crochet baby items, I crochet sweaters and blankets. I love crochet and discovered that love for crochet is not only also a lineage ancestral thing, but also my connection at one point on my path with Obatala. Obatala is the weaver Orisha. And so so weaving techniques, crochet, knitting, things like that are governed also by Obatala. So I came by that honestly. And I also, on our website, one of my beji, she makes something called peoples. And it was just a word that we just came up. She started making them when she was young. She, you know, they're my beji are going to be 31 this year. And I gave her a book on how to make dolls, and she loved the sock doll technique. And then she asked me to buy her some socks, and then, of course, she got older and, you know, had her own money and allowance, and she would buy these socks or knit textiles, and she made these peepos, which are comfort dolls, she calls them. Some of them are comfort dolls, so they have an ancestral feel or look to them, and then some are definitely, like when you see an issue, the spirit dolls, she calls those spirit dolls. And then she has medicine dolls, which are very, very, very detailed and complex, and they come in their own container, like her creator-destroyer medicine doll actually has to be chained into this box because she says he gets up and moves and will leave out of it. And so we do prints where, again, my Veji took the concept of making, creating sketches of the Orisha if they were humans and youth, so children to teenagers. And so they came up with the little Oris, the little Oris. And those are prints. We're actually out of those, and I guess we're going to start reproducing those again from the original sketches, and folks can order individual prints of the little Oris. And they're on the Design Work Studios website as well as the Sankofa Safo website.
I posted the link to the designworkstudios.web.com, so the people who are on the phone, all of these various products can be ordered, the paintings, sculptures, dolls, beadwork, metalwork, all of this can be ordered on the Design Works Studios, that's Design Works, WESIGN Works, WORKS Studios, STUDIOS dot web, WEDS dot com. So Design Works Studios dot web dot com. You can order the various, you know, cultural productions from Naila from that page, as well as Sankofa Safo dot web dot com. There are links to both. So you mentioned a couple of things I want to. So you mentioned your. Well, first, it's very important the way you were talking about, you know, the lineage connection to people producing ritual items, whether it's items for the ancestral shrine, items for the deity shrine, the clothing that people will wear ritually, whether it's during initiation or through a ritual bath or whatever it is. We don't have to spend money to import sculptures from the continent or import staffs from the continent or import clothing from the continent. We have people who are born and raised right here who are directly descended from ancestral lineages who have that capacity and have that orientation and have that ancestral mandate and responsibility to produce those ritual items, clothing as well as sculptures, for our ancestral religious practices right here where we are. So that's one thing. But then you mentioned your Ibejis, which in the Yoruba tradition, for people who don't know, Ibeji means twin. So, yeah, Naila has Ibeji, she has twins. So that leads into the Sankofa Safo website, sankofasafo.web.com. So because you have Ibeji, you are Ia Ibeji, and you talk about, because that's very important, it also has to do with, you mentioned birthright and ancestral inheritance with regard to spiritual. So with regard to Ashe, so you can you help the audience understand what is the nature of Ibeji and that role that you carry, that you were born with, actually?
Right. So, again, it's a lineage thing. Okay, so just a little biology. Women have twins because their eggs split or they release more than one egg, and then it's fertilized, you know, at the same time as another one. And unfortunately, brothers, it kind of doesn't have anything to do with you all, except to be able to pass that gene on to your daughters. So the twin gene is passed on from men to their daughters. or from their, so my father's mother had two sets of twins. So that gene was passed on to me. It also helps or doesn't help, depending on your perspective, that, of course, my father's dominant ancestral lineage is Yoruba, and, of course, everybody knows that, or maybe not everybody knows, but here's a little other little known fact, that the Yoruba people have the most twin births of all the people in the world. And then
right.
after them are Akan and group of people out of the Cameroon. And if I'm not mistaken, is it Malenke? So going towards the Ivory Coast, there's another group of people that has a high incidence rate of 20. so it was passed to me through my father. So I'm the youngest of 9 children. I was the only one and the first one to have twins. My Ibeji are not the only twins that I was pregnant with. I just didn't, the other ones didn't make it. So it's not like this unusual coincidence or rare phenomenon with me specifically. So not only does Ibeji mean twins, it also means the Ibeji are deities. So there's a deity, deities that are Ibeji. And Ibeji human beings, twins, are actually believed and have been and proven to show that they actually have the power. They're the one tangible example of a deity living within or manifesting or embodying a human being from birth without doing anything to them. They don't have to have a ritual or ceremony to be who they are. And so the mother of twins, Iyabeji, literally means mother of twins, but it also means the mother. Let me do it like this. It's the tangible proof of the dichotomy of the universe. So there's this dichotomy or duality in the universe. So Iyabeji is the mother twins, but also means that they are. So Ibeji themselves are believed to be gods and goddesses. And so Iyabeji means that you are the mother of gods and goddesses, and that in and of itself is an initiation right there. If you are meant to have twins, you will have twins, whether you think or know that it's a part of your lineage or your biology. Twins are very interesting in and of themselves, in that they are a split of the same egg or cell to produce two human beings. And that happens a lot in Yoruba tradition. There's also incidences of triplets as well, but not as often, but it's not unheard of either. Being Iyabeji gives me sort of a, I don't want to say upper hand, it gives me a handicap, it gives me an edge, it gives me an advantage that not only other mothers don't have, but also it gives me a place within Yoruba tradition that is very, very high. And it's not to toot my own horn, it's just a part of culture and tradition of Yoruba tradition, is that Iyabejis are thought to, they are coveted, they are spoiled, or they are given a lot of consideration And oftentimes they're feared. That's a whole different conversation, but Ibeji are the beings in the community that bring prosperity and abundance. They're the ones who can bring and wreak havoc because of who they are. They don't share the same ori or head, but they are bound by heart and spirit in a way that no other human beings are. Can't think of anything else. Did I leave anything out? Did I answer your question?
No, that's good. That was important to talk about how they don't share the same ori, but they have a unique way. Also that, the Iya Ibeji, or the mother of the Ibejis, you're basically a shrine to usher in children of the Orisha into the world. So that's an initiation for you. So kind of like, what is the similar relationship, for example, between the Iya Ibeji, the mother of twins, the mother who brings these children of the Orisha into the world? So that's an initiation for you in and of itself. And then relationship between Iya Ibeji and the Iyami, because there's a lot of information floating around about the Iyami, the mothers, that's just all over the place. But there, I know there's a relationship there between Iyabeji and the Iyami.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons why I said it was a different conversation, was about the fear part. Because usually the Ibeji or Iyabeji is connected to the Iyami. And the Iyami means literally, that translates to my mother, but it also is a reference to the ancient primordial mothers that are not Orisha. They existed in and of themselves in the universe before the Orisha. And apparently, not in spite of, but alongside of the Supreme Being. So that energy, that female, reproductive, feminine energy was there in the universe and had to be there in the universe for the universe to become something other than blackness. The Iyami, or the Galede, the Abayifo in our tradition are directly connected to, also directly connected to the ancestral side of our lineages or traditions. So the Egungun, the Iyami are there. They are I'm sorry, I'm actually getting a message. Hold on a second. Okay. So out of all the things that I do professionally, I'm very, very, very connected to very clear audience. So Egun spirits, I hear them, they talk to me, or I can hear them. And so when they start talking to me all at one time, or too many at one time, it becomes distracting it puts me off. So that's what just happened just now. I had a whole bunch of Egun talking to me at one time. So the EME basically are connected because of bringing forth to Ibeji Asesi is bringing forth two consciousnesses at the same time from, a single birth. They're also the Iyabeji connected to the Iyami, it's about a power thing. It's about the ability to, just like I said, just to bring forth two spiritual consciousness at the same time in one birth, especially in one single birth, but also when you do it multiple times. It's pretty much a clear sign that you're connected to multiple aspects of, at least in Yoruba tradition, you're connected to multiple aspects of Yoruba tradition from the deity side of it, from the ancestral side of it, and then in this particular case, the primordial mother. The Iyami are also the entities in Yoruba tradition who crown the head. So people don't realize that during an initiation, if it's done properly, there should be someone who is there of the Iyami to help not only put the ashe on the initiate's head, but also to guide and usher in and monitor what Egun, Egungun that are present and influencing or influential in that part of initiation ceremony. And then just for clarity, there's a difference between Egun and an Egungun. Egun are, for lack of a better term, they're more like the contemporary dead, okay, or not dead, but the contemporary spirits, the past on. And then Egungun are ancient and primordial ancestral spirits. And not everybody can have or mess with the Iyami, and also the Iyami are feared by most Nigerian men, whether they're Hausa, Igbo, Igbo, if anybody has familiarity with Yoruba tradition and the Iyami in Nigeria, they don't talk about and they don't mess with the Iyami. And if you talk to a continental Nigerian brother, especially if he's Yoruba, they're going to deny any knowledge or awareness of the Iyami. But deep down inside, they actually do know and they're lying.
Right, and it, some will even, you know, not want to mention the name Iyami. They don't even want to say utter the
right.
The title sometimes, just because of the, you know, fear, especially if they're engaged in something they shouldn't be doing. They want to hide, you know, hide from them, thinking that they can hide from them. So we wanted to, you know, touch on that because I know that that directly impacts, like you were saying, you get messages from the Egungun, you get messages from the Iyami, you're an Iya Ibeji, a mother of Ibeji. So we know that that informs your, even just your view, your approach to, you know, creation, artistic creation, cultural creation, and things like that. So people need to know that this is not just, you know, somebody just make, you know, as I'm sure you know by now, people listening by now, it's not just, you know, putting some things together to make some money, but this is informed by, you know, the ancestors of the ancestors and the Orisha, the Egungun and the Orisha, the kind of works that you'll see on Design Work Studio, as well as Runway Underground, as well as Ntumapa. That's where it's coming from. That's the source where it's coming from. I did want you to, we have a few more minutes. But I did want you to speak on talking about, you know, when you were giving advice for people who may have an inclination, orientation towards sewing or creating, things like that, they should embrace that inclination and get really good at it. And that reminded me of what you said about the meaning of the name Ntumapa, and we put the link up there for your ntumapa.web.com website. Just if you can give us some basic information on Ntumapa. People want to listen, by the way, past 11 o'clock. You have 6 minutes to call in. The live stream will cut off at 11 o'clock. Call-in number if you want to listen on the phone past 11. We may not go more than a couple of minutes past 11, but just in case, call-in number is 657-383-0635, 657-383-0635, and then you can continue to listen. But, okay, so the Ntumapa, I know you were talking about how that meant not only just creation of, you know, textiles or developing textiles, but the integrity behind what you're doing and how you're creating. So how did that name come about and why did you focus on that?
Okay, so one of our models, or one of our former male models, is from Ghana. He's Ga, and he also speaks Cree. And I asked him for something, or I was guided to ask him for a word or a phrase that would sum up what we were trying to say and do with Ntumapa before we had the name Ntumapa, which basically Ntumapa is our apparel production boot camp workshop, the workroom, and textile studio and fashion incubator for the member designers within Runway Underground, as well as what we're doing with the boot camp. And you can see, if you go to the February page, calendar page, and the June calendar page of our Ntumapa website, you'll see the classes and the workshops that we were doing back in February and what we just finished. And so basically Ntumapa generally means a thing made very, very well, especially in regards to textiles and clothing. But what it really means is a thing made so well that it has an other earthly quality to it. So some people might say it's ashe, but it's even not different, or it's not more than ashe, it's different from ashe. It's, you know how when you look at an ancestral artifact or item, a work of art, whatever you want to call it, an implement, and it just moves you and it stays with you, especially in a positive way. I'm not talking about something that gives you the creeps, because if something gives you the creeps, there's something wrong with a perception. So when you see or hear a drum, when you see a drum, hear a drum rhythm and see a person doing African dance, and it moves something in you so powerfully and unexplainably, that's Ntumapa. Okay. And so because of not only the lack of attention to black folks in the fashion community here in Austin, there's also a lack of quality workmanship in the garments that are being made, not just here in Austin, but just across the secondary fashion industry, across, you know, the country and the globe, and that you have all of these wonderful fashion designers out here making some really, really creative and cool things. But if you look on the inside of the garment, they look like crap. There are a lot of fashion designers out here who don't know how to draft patterns. They don't know how to work with an apparel technician, a stitcher, a draper, a coster. And so we wanted to include this element of Ntumapa, of extremely high quality, attention to detail aspect to what not only is happening in Austin's fashion community, but especially what is happening and what black designers and folks in the industry need to know and be able to do and be able to take their businesses and their collections to the next level. There are a lot of fashion designers who make one-off, you know, one piece at a time, or bespoke work, which is another way of saying custom. And then also they make limited edition runs, but then they don't have the ability to produce their work or know-how or the business side of that. So Ntumapa is meant to provide that professional development for fashion designers in Austin, but also to give people who want to support fashion designers the knowledge and skills that they need to increase their profits or their income, and by that I mean apparel technicians. So you have to have drapers and pattern makers and stitchers, those the apparel technicians, and who, by the way, a good pattern drafter can make $50,000 to $90,000 a year doing drafting patterns. A really good one can make $120,000 a year. Same thing with a draper. So we want to, through Ntumapa, increase the skill set of potential apparel technicians in the community, and also use it to create a training program for, because we have a huge African refugee and immigrant community here, and And my personal goal and desire with through Ntumapa and Runway Underground is to get these folks trained. Some of them already know how to sew, especially the men, and get them behind these machines, at these tables, behind, you know, with these dress forms, you know, with these scissors in their hands, because we need cutters, we need pressers, we need all aspects of the apparel production side of things. And we want to create jobs and maintain jobs here in Austin through Ntumapa.
Okay, Mirase, I appreciate that. And we did put the links up there. So we have the links for Ntumapa.webs.com. We have the runwayunderground.webs.com, designworksstudios.webs.com, and sankofasafo.webs.com. And you can link to the various, and Naila is also on Facebook as well. It's Naila Akinyemi Sankofa. And then you have a Runway Underground fan page on Facebook also. And the Tiwantiwa website.
Right.
So there's so much we didn't get, so we're going to have to, you know, get you back on to talk about some more stuff. The sustainable living piece. But we really appreciate you coming on, honoring the show with your presence, may I say. So we don't have any questions, any more questions here. So we're going to end here. We want everybody to support Ia Naila. Go to the website, support the artwork, support the culture, support her endeavors. We will be having, and we have you come back on for Ekua, but also at some point on the Ojida show, just talking about the ancestral religious traditions, Yoruba tradition, and so forth. And because we also know you have a book coming out, not just the Jishe Fashion Journal, but also the book dealing with ancestral religious practices, right? So
right.
I know that's coming up real soon.
Called, yeah.
Right.
Mhm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. My little brother is getting on me like he's supposed to, because I get inundated with everything else, and I need to focus on. It's called Nsimbaye, and Nsimbaye Adulowo ancestral tradition for the non-initiate. And so basically, it's about. It's going to be a book about, primarily from a Yoruba perspective, but some, you know, some of the other traditions will be there, about what devotees or folks who are delving into our ancestral traditions need to know before they spend a whole lot of money with thinking they need to get initiations or getting all these readings and being, you know, like misled about certain things and, you know, the questions to ask when you're sitting on the mat and getting a reading. The things to know about certain rituals and ceremonies, and, you know, how to interact and what happens in the ile, for instance. So just basically all the nuts and bolts that go into being a devotee in any African ancestral tradition, and especially Yoruba tradition, that folks need to know and be aware of.
Okay. We're definitely looking forward to that dropping very soon. There was one other question.
Okay.
In the chat room, he says, so are you connected with other Afurakani, Afuraikaitini in other areas in the U.S. or abroad who are working towards the same aims as Runway Underground and Ntumapa?
I thought that question was going to be about ancestral tradition. I was going to say, not so much, but as far as Runway Underground and Ntumapa, definitely, we actually, and I'm glad that you, whoever that is that asked that question, because we are planning to launch not only the magazine, so we want, you know, fashion designers, stylists, people who, you know, do phenomenal braids and hairstyles, especially in natural black hair, to include them in the magazine, to maybe even when we're, because again, I'm from Chicago and I love being from Chicago, but we plan to put a component of Runway Underground in Chicago and some of the other major cities and do some events and photo shoots in other cities where we'll need to link up with other people, photographers, hair and makeup folks, folks to help us do model calls and auditions for whatever project that we're doing in that city. We definitely want and need folks from, black folks from throughout the diaspora. So if we have some, you know, jewelry designers, fashion designers, male and female, who do clothing of any genre, style in the UK, any place in Europe, any place, definitely in on the motherland, in the Caribbean, Brazil, South America. We want to link up with those folks. And if they can't be, because, you know, because the fashion industry is very interesting, and especially from a PR marketing perspective, that we have people send us things so that they can be photographed on our models, especially for certain shoots. So if you're a fashion designer and you want to send us a garment that we can use in the shoot, on our style pages that are coming up, or you want to apply to be in and participate in our African Fashion Week event next year, then you're welcome to, you know, fill out that. We'll have a form and a link, online form to fill out and for folks to participate in that. But as far as, like, you know, getting us information so that we can include you in your work in the magazine is really, really important, like I said, in our shoots. And we do return things. So unless, you know, there are folks who send things to magazines all the time and they either, you know, let them keep them and put them in their clothing or shoe closet or accessories closet, or we send things back. But it's one way for the world and or different part of the world to get to see and know what other designers are doing outside of Austin and especially, you know, outside of Texas.
Okay. Okay, well, that was the last question. Okay, so may I say again, really appreciate you coming on. And we will be connecting once again when that book drops, or even before that.
Everybody keep emailing and dropping me messages saying, you know, yeah, when's that book coming out? So that'll guilt me into getting it finished.
Right, everybody do that. Send a message periodically. But may I say again, Odupwe, and we will be connecting soon.
Right, and I want to say, Madase Odupwe, to you for all the work that you do. And this brother is just phenomenal and insightful and a taskmaster when it comes to, you know, the research and putting out the best, correct, and in-depth information out there on our ancestral culture, traditions, and histories. And you need just as much support and thanks as anybody. So, Madase Papapa to you for all that you do.
Yeah, I'll say that for that. And we do want to say we are working on trying to get something. We had a couple of events that we had to push back that were in Texas, but we are going to do something in Texas as soon as we can, as soon as we can get something together. So we'll get to Austin, Houston, and Fort Worth, Dallas-Fort Worth area. We're also looking at Florida, South Carolina. So we're working on some things. So we'll be updating everybody on what's going on. So, again, Yerase to everyone for tuning in. We'll be back next Benada, Abenada Tuesday for Ojira, and next Awukuda or Kuada Wednesday for Egua Marketplace. And we will see you then. You can hit us up, connect with us on our website, odwiraf.com, and we will connect with you next week. What's up?
Wait. I got to say one thing, please.
Oh,
are you still there?
Okay. What's up?
Yeah, just real quick, for anybody still listening, just also that separation of business and culture and tradition. So I would love for folks to go on our Facebook, our Runway Underground Facebook page and like us, or like my Inyama Isheona collection from our apparel line. But if you want to talk to me about tradition and cultural things, please use my personal Naila Iyabeji Akinyemi Sankofa Facebook page. I don't talk about tradition or anything on my Runway Underground Facebook page at all. Okay. So don't feel like if you contact me there and I'm not ignoring you, I'm just going to defer you to my personal Facebook page. Okay?
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
May I stay for that?
All right.
Okay.
All right.
And we will connect with everybody. Okay. All right. Heads up.
All right. Heads up.
Okay.
All right. Odabo.
All right. Then. Okay. So we will connect with everyone next week. If you have any questions, comments, need some information, hit us up on our Ojirafo page, O-D-W-I-R-A. fasinfreeo.com. Go to the contact us section and you can connect with us there. We are also, our Nana Soam fundraiser is still in effect. We're raising funds through the sale of our soft cover publications to cover the expenses for these different trips that we're making to different states, because we're giving free workshops, presentations to every state that we go to. We don't charge anyone for coming to our event, and we also give away a free copy of one of our books to everyone who attends our event. So in order to cover these expenses, of course, we are having a fundraiser. All of our soft cover books, all seven of them, range between $8 and $11, so they're very inexpensive, and the information is very valuable. So for those who want to contribute to that, that assists us with raising the funds, but of course also you receive publications. So you can hit us up on our ojirafo.com page, the Nhoma page on the website, Nhoma. But just go to the regular website, ojirafo.com, and you can connect with us there. You can purchase the publications, as well as download the free publications, the free PDF version. And again, Yedase, we thank you, and we will connect with you next week. That's it.